You're listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. For I Will Be With You. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible.
Welcome back to the For I Will Be With You podcast for the 15th week of the year from April 8th to April 14th, covering Exodus 9:12 to Exodus 11:4. We are still in the story of the plagues that God is bringing against Pharaoh and the Egyptians in order to free the Israelites from their slavery in Egypt. In Exodus 9:12, it says, "And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, and he hearkened not unto them, as the Lord had spoken unto Moses." This is a theme that comes up a number of times in this part of the story, that God hardens the heart of Pharaoh so that he will not relent and let his Israelite slaves go free. It's a confusing concept for many people, including the sages who wrote the commentary on the Torah, because there's a conflict between two ideas. One is that human beings have free will and can make decisions for themselves, and the other is that God has a plan for us, or God is involved in our lives. So which is it, and why is it that God would reduce or get rid of Pharaoh's ability to have free choice? So a couple of ideas come down, a couple of answers come down. One idea is that Pharaoh had his sin was so great in his cruelty to the Israelites that he needed to be punished in a balanced way. There's a concept of measure for measure, that if you just to keep it simple, if you steal $10, then $10 will be taken from you. Like, there has to be a balance between the sin and the punishment. So Pharaoh's sin was so great in his enslavement of the Israelites that a simple punishment like, locusts and death of the cattle, which simply wasn't enough. So God ensured that Pharaoh would keep saying no. There's also an idea that Pharaoh had simply sinned so much that repentance was impossible, that God was demonstrating that there are certain sins for which there can be no atonement. Now, this is a difficult idea for most of us, but I think it serves a purpose. We can ask ourselves in the recovery process, if there are things that we've done that really should be impossible to atone for, because, we work with the idea that you can make amends for anything pretty much, or you can be forgiven. But I think it's a good challenge question, maybe a way to put it. What is it? Is there something we've done that really is beyond forgiveness? And how would we deal with that? Is there anybody in our life that we need to work with on that level? Now, in Exodus 10:3, it says, "And Moses and Aaron went in unto Pharaoh and said unto him, Thus saith the Lord, the God of the Hebrews, How long wilt thou refuse to humble thyself before me? Let my people go, that they may serve me." So one of the, just a detail, is that the specific request that Moses had made of Pharaoh originally was that he wanted the Israelites to be let to go into the wilderness for 3 days to have a festival of celebration of God. Moses didn't actually ask for the people to be set free completely. Now, it was understood. Everybody knew what the real request was, and that the people weren't going to come back after this 3-day festival, but that's technically what was being asked for. But the plagues are going on, and Pharaoh continues to rely on his prior set of beliefs to guide him through the experience, meaning his belief system is that Pharaoh, am a god, and I am more powerful than any human being, and therefore I will do what I want, and anybody who wants something that I don't want to give them is out of luck. Okay, but this is a disaster for him. And the harder he tries to resist the will of God, the worse things get. Like an alcoholic who tries to solve his drinking problem and his life problems his way, using self-will, Pharaoh gets deeper and deeper into trouble. And what happens through the plagues is that the kingdom of Egypt is getting systematically destroyed. You know, first the river is destroyed, then the crops are destroyed, then the animals die, then there's locusts. I mean, it's just one thing after another, and all the wealth and certainly the normal life of the country is being completely eradicated over this time. But Pharaoh never does truly accept God and understand that he, Pharaoh, is not running the show. It is like this in our own individual recovery. We have the choice to release ourselves from self-will and come to understand that we are not running the show. We can turn our lives over to God and live God's will. If we do this, we reduce our risk of ruining our lives further by thinking we have all the answers. In Exodus 10:7, even Pharaoh's servants, his advisors, are turning against him. It says, "And Pharaoh's servants said unto him, How long shall this man be a snare unto us? Let the men go, that they may serve the Lord their God. Knowest thou not yet that Egypt is destroyed?" See, here again we have this idea that everybody around Pharaoh is seeing the country is being absolutely destroyed. This isn't like a inconvenience. This is a destruction of their country and everything that they value in their lives. The people surrounding Pharaoh were getting tired of these plagues, and they were getting tired of the inability of their leader to grasp what is really going on. "How long shall this man be a snare unto us?" they ask. The answer evidently was forever. As long as Pharaoh wants it to go on, it's going to go on. And this, unfortunately, may remind us of what it's like to live through the addiction of a loved one. The addict will continue to pursue his or her way of solving problems, no matter how disastrous the results. And we may plead with the addict, "How long can you go on like this?" And the answer always seems to be, forever. Okay, there's no changing the addict's mind until some kind of bottom is reached, or until it's too late. We all know where this can go: divorce, incarceration, death, institutions. The correct answer to "How long shall this man be a snare?" or "How long will you continue with your insanity?" should be, really, "Until I recognize that God has a plan for me, and I am not following it." It is only when we surrender and accept that God has a plan for us, and that our plan is not the way to solve our problems, that we begin to experience sobriety and serenity. And for those loved ones close to us who pray for us to change, the surrender will be the only way to help them get the serenity that they want as well. Exodus 10:8 says, "And Moses and Aaron were brought again unto Pharaoh, and he," Pharaoh, "said unto them, Go serve the Lord your God, but who are they that shall go?" So here's Pharaoh hinting that he's willing to make a compromise. There's been a bunch of plagues, things are really getting out of control, and Pharaoh is finally saying, "Okay, you know what, if you want to go out to the wilderness for 3 days, go ahead. But..." He can't resist saying, "Who's going to go?" Meaning, he says only the men should go, and the women and the children and all your animals will stay behind, basically with me, with Pharaoh, where I will keep them hostage to make sure that you come back to be slaves. And this is, Pharaoh is in denial on a number of different levels here. I mean, one of which is that obviously everybody, including he, knows that this is not a request to go out in the wilderness for 3 days. This is a demand that they be set free forever. But Pharaoh is still working under this false premise that this is just a 3-day excursion, and he demands that they leave their wives and children behind as hostages to ensure that they will return. Although it is an indication that Pharaoh is starting to change his mind. But he can't help himself. He can't help but make this impossible demand. So, if you've ever dealt with an addict, you might recognize this tortured process of self-destruction. There's never any sensible outcome in life when dealing with an addict. And I think if we think it's sensible, then we are becoming enablers. That would be my other thought on that. The addict is typically always on the make, conning everyone for more and more and more until he and everyone around him has nothing. A hard crash to the bottom may shake the addict loose from this fixation on getting over on people, though death is also the exit path that they end up with. So if you're living with an addict in your life, this verse might help you understand that you're dealing with a force that you cannot control either and that you should let go. Or if you are the addict and you're acting this way, the verse should remind you that your constant efforts to arrange your life to your liking will inevitably fail. And I think we've seen this, I've certainly seen this so many times. You see someone who, I'll just give you like a simple example. Maybe we've all been through something like this. Like you have someone who's using or drinking and they can't get a job. So finally there's an opportunity for them to get some kind of job. And they're like, well, it's not a good enough job. I need to make more money. Well, it's like, so they don't take it. They'd rather, you know, stay at home, be drunk and unemployed and broke than actually have a job. It's like they want it on their terms, even though their terms are impossible. And what do you do with someone like that? And the answer is you really can't do much. Sometimes the best thing is just to let it go. Acknowledge that this person doesn't understand who is really in control of the universe. Then in Exodus 10:16, Exodus 10:16 goes, "Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron in haste, and he said, 'I have sinned against the Lord your God and against you.'" So this is in response to the plague of locusts, which is one of the later plagues and is one of the most severe, where I don't know if anybody has ever experienced a locust plague. I haven't, but I've seen things kind of like it. A swarm of insects. It's a frightening and disgusting thing. And it's also absolutely terrifying if you're in an agricultural society, because these animals come and they eat all the food. I mean, they, like, imagine trillions and trillions of insects flying in and eating everything in sight. That means that they're taking your food and all the food that you have for your wealth. So it's terrifying, even to Pharaoh, because even Pharaoh is starting to feel like this is getting pretty bad. But we also have in this verse an example of what you might call alcoholic remorse, right? He's really ready to say he's sorry, but he doesn't really mean it. This is alcoholic remorse. After some horrible incident, the alcoholic, you know, is ready for a big apology. It's big, it's fast, and it's fake, because it's not sincere. We've all heard this. I'm never going to do that again, right? How many times have we said that? There's even a comedy actor who has a bit about this where he goes, "I'm never going to do that again." And then he waits for the audience, and the audience says, "And this time I really mean it." It's actually very funny because it's so true. but once the hangover is faded, the addiction returns and the behavior has not changed. When we work a program, we can start to change the pattern, or at least even maybe recognize the pattern. That's a good first step there. And stop the negative behaviors. And when we do slip, to offer reasonable, meaningful apologies and promises we can keep. Exodus 11:3 says, "And the Lord gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Moreover, the man Moses was very great in the land of Egypt, in the sight of Pharaoh's servants, and in the sight of the people." So at this moment, this is after the ninth plague, and we're about to have the plague of the killing of the firstborn. And Egypt is essentially already, you know, completely destroyed, and the Egyptian people are very aware of what's going on. They're aware of the fact that they're seeing the work of a more powerful god than they're familiar with. Egypt was a polytheistic society, idolatrous religion society, and they had gods of this and that, and they had never seen a god, so to speak. They didn't recognize this was the one true God, but they'd never seen a god do anything like this before to them. So they were frightened, but they began to respect the god that was taking these actions against them in a way. And what happens is that God has instructed the Israelites to go and quote-unquote ask the Egyptians for gold and silver and other valuables. So there's some discussion about what this really means. The format is, yes, they went and asked for these items, but they were very willingly given over. So it was sort of like a polite robbery, if you will. One interpretation is that the Israelites were simply getting the money, the payment for over 200 years of unpaid labor from the Egyptians. But there's an idea that the Egyptians were in some ways happy to hand over this money, really hoping to get rid of this problem. But also, as it says, the people found favor in the eyes of the Egyptians. And there's a really powerful lesson in this, which comes up here and later, which is that these two peoples did not hate each other. That the battle was between God and Pharaoh. And that later on, the Jews are specifically instructed by God not to hate Egyptians. It says, you shall not hate an Egyptian. And we can take from this an idea, there's a concept of, you know, love the sinner and hate the sin. In the alcoholic, it's similar. That the alcoholic, the human being inside, is not the same as the acts that the alcoholic self commits. And that's not to say that we don't have to make amends and be accountable, but the drunk who does bad things should not be hated, because that's the drunk. There's another person inside that is waiting to come out. Exodus 11:4. Moses says, and Moses said, thus saith the Lord, about midnight will I go out into the midst of Egypt. And what God is saying to Moses, or saying through Moses, is God will go out and slay the firstborn sons of Egypt. This is a very significant moment in the Bible, because this is the first and arguably the last time that God will himself go out into the world and act in human history. Of course, we have many, many, many incidents of God being present in history or affecting human actions, but this is the first time that God actually will go out as an entity and interact with the human world. And God is going to go out and show Pharaoh who is really in charge of the universe. God makes himself appear into the world and act in the world directly. And before and after, God has acted in hidden ways. Now his deeds are in plain sight. So the Exodus story is really nothing less than the revelation of the existence of God to the entire world. And it's an open set of miracles that the Israelites and everyone else can witness, so they will know that there is a God in the universe. Today we don't have this privilege of seeing God work so openly, but if we've been through recovery, we should have a profound conviction that God works miracles for each and every one of us, even if his hands are not clearly visible. When you see a recovering addict who has made progress from self-destruction to a fulfilling life, this verse should make you understand that the person you see has been touched as it were, by the finger of God.
You've been listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. Daily Reflections on Recovery from the Bible. www.foriwillbewithyou.com